Today, we are very fortunate to be having a review of the book Wild, which is wildly popular. And first, I'm going to introduce Stephanie Brader Albright, who's going to introduce our reviewer.
Good afternoon. I'm Stephanie Brader Albright. There are no microphones out in the wild. I am a friend of Leslie Richards and was fortunate to hike with her in 2003, 2005, and 2009 on parts of the Pacific Crest Trail when she did a whole month, 5 to 6 weeks even, on one section of the trail. I was with her for 4 to 6 days and have had a little insight into the way it is hiked. You will see in the book that Leslie has lots of parallels and insights on the spiritual journey and meeting hardcore hikers, which is very different. And she has had quite a few adventures. And I hope you enjoy, have you enjoyed the book and will enjoy her review on her journey. So here's Leslie Richards.
Holler yet. We're going up. When Connie Giorgio asked me to review Wild for the library's random reviews, I hesitated for about a nanosecond. I'd never done a book review, and I wasn't exactly sure how to go about it. Nevertheless, I had recently read and loved the book almost as much as I love the Pacific Crest Trail. And at this point, I'm going to show you the Pacific Crest Trail. It's the Pacific Crest National Scenic Trail is a trail that runs 2,650 miles traveling from the border of Mexico to Canada. So it's a pretty long trail. It's one of the first national scenic trails. It was established in 1968, although it took many, many years for it to be completed. And it is quite rugged, quite vigorous. Somewhere between 200 and 300 people each year attempt to do the entire trail. It follows the crest of the mountain. So you go through the Sierras, you go through the Cascades. As you make your way through from the, you start in the desert. There aren't too many mountains there. But you stick to the highest mountains as you move up through the states. So I'm what's known as a section hiker. In 2003, I hiked Oregon, except for, as you'll learn, 50 miles that was in flames. In 2005, I hiked Washington. In 2009 is when I went back to complete the missing 50 miles. The initial Oregon hike was launched as a 50th birthday present to myself. My birthday's in December, so I didn't feel I could do it in December, so it was the following summer. Also, it was a journey to honor my father, who died in 2002. He taught me and my siblings to love the wilderness. We took our first backpack trip as children to Pamelia Lake in the Cascades. I was 9, my brother was 10, and my sister was only 5. And so when I did my Pacific Crest Trail journey, I carried some of his ashes with me. And as you will see, I made altars along the way. Part of the reason I wanted to hike the trail is that my parents had done it. They had done it in 1975. And my sister did it as a solo in 1978. And so it had always been in the back of my mind. And so when I turned 50, I was kind of not really in the mood to have a big party because my dad had died fairly recently. And I didn't feel very festive. And then it came to me. I could give myself the present of taking a month and hiking the Oregon Pacific Crest Trail, which had always been something that I wanted to do. So about this review, I decided I would do it in three parts. First, I'm going to provide just a brief summary of the book. And I assume many of you have read it, but I'll just kind of summarize it kind of from my perspective. And also I use a lot of Cheryl Strayed's words in to describe what I got out of the book. Then I'll share a little bit about what reviewers have had to say about the book. And then because I saw a lot of parallels in her journey and mine, I'll share some of those parallels. But for those of you who have read the book, I want you to know you needn't get too excited because my version was definitely G-rated and hers was not. And then at the end, I'll ask if people have questions, and then I actually have kind of a collection of photos from the Pacific Crest Trail in Oregon, and I thought I would show those for anyone who might be interested. And those kind of show some of the parallels I saw, but also really the glory of the trail. Wild is an autobiographical story of a young woman raised in Minnesota. The author alternates between telling the story of how and why she came to hike the PCT and then the tale of actually doing it. So you get snippets of her feet really shredding, and then you get snippets of what drew her to do this very arduous hike. When she was a child, when she was six, her mother finally divorced her father, who was quite abusive, and she and her two siblings lived with this single mom who was quite poor. Although her mother repeatedly tells them, "We aren't poor because we're rich in love." When her mother remarries, the family circumstances improve, but they do move to northern Minnesota, build a very small house, initially a tar paper shack just big enough for them to sleep in, and they live in this house without plumbing, without electricity, basically off the grid until she goes away for the to school. Because she's so isolated, the place where they build this house is 20 miles from the nearest town in two different directions. The family unit is really tight, and she describes it as being bound by her mother's love. The amount she loved us was beyond her reach. It could not be quantified or contained. It was the 10,000 things named in the Tao Te Ching's universe, and then 10,000 more. Her love was full-throated and all-encompassing and unadorned. Every day she blew through her entire reserve. She and her mother are very close, and she's very close to her siblings because they're so isolated from other people. But when she decides to go to college, her mother, who only had a high school education, decides she's going to go to college too. So when she's a senior in high school, she starts studying with her daughter. I thought, if I were a senior in high school, I'm not sure I would want my mother studying along with me, nor would I have wanted her going to the same college I did, which is what initially happens. However, her mother is very sensitive to the fact that that might not be such a good thing. So they work out this arrangement where she actually is not allowed to speak to her daughter unless first spoken to. So they both go to college. They both do extraordinarily well. And when they're both seniors, just a few months from graduation, her mother develops this persistent cough, goes to the doctor, and is diagnosed with terminal lung cancer. As she says, her 45-year-old vegetarianish, garlic-eating, natural remedy-using, non-smoker mother is diagnosed with terminal lung cancer. And she's given, at best, a year. She dies 7 weeks later. And Cheryl writes, "It hadn't occurred to me my mother would die. Until she was dying, the thought had never entered my mind. She was monolithic and insurmountable. the keeper of my life. It was only after her death that I realized who she was, the apparently magical force at the center of our family, who kept us all invisibly spinning in the powerful orbit around her. So after she dies, her stepfather kind of drifts away. She describes him as slowly becoming a stranger. And she and her siblings, who had been incredibly close, drift apart. They're all pretty uniformly, I think, devastated by the loss of their mother. So if you've read the book, you'll agree with me that to say that Cheryl Strayed goes off the deep end after her mother dies is kind of an understatement. It's like she's frantically trying to escape and cope with the loss of her mom. And she travels a lot. She goes to Minnesota, Texas. They moved to New York City briefly. She and her husband, she marries at the age of 19, so she's young and has a husband. They go to New Mexico, Arizona, Nevada, California, Oregon, Wyoming, back to Oregon, back to Wyoming. I mean, she's just constantly traveling for a period of about 4 years. Worse yet, she starts cheating on her husband. And she does it repeatedly despite the fact that she says she really loves him and he's her best friend. After a while, they kind of separate, and she moves to Portland and hooks up with a man who hooks her up with heroin. She describes her life as unmoored by sorrow. She writes, "I was ready to self-destruct. I didn't just say yes to heroin. I pulled it in with both hands." I've never done that. Rescued by a friend and her husband, she returns to Minneapolis only to realize that she's pregnant. And she's on this solo car trip, she's gone to pick up a vehicle that had broken down. And she's driving along in a vehicle, and she reports, "I burst into tears, crying so hard I could barely steer. And not only for the pregnancy I didn't want, I was crying over all of it. Over the sick mire I'd made of my life since my mother died, over the stupid existence that had become my own. I was not meant to be this way, to live this way, to fail so darkly." And it's at this moment that she describes herself remembering a book that she was browsing recently at REI. She'd gone there to pick up a small item, and she's standing in the checkout line, and she spots this book, The Pacific Crest Trail, Volume 1. California. So instead of going directly home, she dries her tears, drives to the nearest REI, buys a copy, and stays up all night reading it. And by dawn, she's hatched a plan to hike 100 days and 1,100 miles of the Pacific Crest Trail. So her plan initially is to get on in Mojave, which is not at the very beginning of the trail, but at the part where you're just starting to really climb into the mountains, and then do the state of California, which is sort of big. It's about 1,600 miles in total on the trail. It's not that long as the crow flies, but of course the crow doesn't fly the same way the trail does. She starts out pretty systematically to read everything she can find and to make plans to do this grand adventure. In the ensuing months, she has an abortion. She divorces her husband. She buys necessary gear and, as the book describes, some that's really not necessary at all. She learns to dehydrate food, and she plans her trip. She writes, "I had to change" was the thought that drove me in those months of planning. "Not into a different person, but back to the person I used to be. Strong, responsible, clear-eyed, and driven. Ethical and good. And the PCT would make me that way. There, I'd walk and think about my entire life. I'd find my strength again, far from everything that had made my life ridiculous." So in early 1995, Strayed travels to the West Coast and makes her way to the Mojave Desert nearly 5 years after her mother's death. On the first day of her hike, Strayed stands before the mirror in a cheap motel in Mojave and sees the woman with the hole in her heart, with this preposterous idea of hiking alone for 3 months on the PCT. She starts off carrying a pack that weighs more than half of her body weight, including 24 and a half pounds of water. So I put this up just so you could see what she had in that pack. And it wasn't just in the pack, because the pack wouldn't hold everything. So she has, I didn't include on there, I think she had 5 bungee cords. And so whatever didn't fit in got bungeed to the outside of her pack. The best part of this is she has never backpacked before. Not once, not one day has she been on a backpack trip. So she makes it 3 miles her first day. Her pack is so heavy that basically she has to kind of sit on the ground and then roll over till she's on her knees and then kind of power lift up from there. That's how she gets her pack on. You have to get to the trailhead, which was about 12 miles from Mojave. And so she hitchhikes, terrified because she's never hitchhiked alone before. Or I'm not even sure she's hitchhiked. When they drop her off at the trailhead, the man taking her pack out says, "Are you sure you can lift that? I can barely lift it." So it gives you an idea of what that's like, how heavy that pack is. And, of course, she's starting off in the Mojave Desert, and it's middle of June by the time she starts. So you're going to need a lot of water, and that section of the trail is known for its lack of water. There are real problems because there are many miles between places where you can access water. Much of the trail, or the book, of course, is about hiking the California Pacific Crest Trail, but only some of it. It turns out that she hikes a lot less than she imagines. First of all, after only 8 days on the trail, she has to hike out to repair her stove because she has a very small little backpacking stove, but she didn't buy the right kind of fuel. So it doesn't work. She's got all this very carefully home dehydrated food, which she can't rehydrate with any heat because she her stove is no longer working. When she goes down to have the stove repaired, she finds a road and follows it down and finds people who give her a ride. She goes into the outdoor store, and the man's very nice, and I think he fixes it for free. But he asks her about, is she going to bypass? She doesn't really know what that means. Well, you bypass a section of the trail when it can't be hiked. And as it turns out, there's record snowfall in the High Sierras in 1995. And she read the book, the trail guide book, faithfully many times, as you do when you're preparing for a trip like this. But she didn't realize that she should have checked on the snowpack. So as it turns out, a great deal of the trail is inaccessible. So she gets back on. She finds out that hundreds of miles of the trail are still buried in snow. So she hikes up as far as Kennedy Meadows and meets some very kind people who, more experienced hikers, who go through her pack and start editing out some of those many, many items that are in it. She continues on even though she's getting up into the snowy area. But after a very brief stint in trail that's covered with snow, where it's very difficult to tell exactly where the trail is, and some really scary, narrow trails that are covered with snow that she has to make her way through, she basically leapfrogs bypasses most of the High Sierras, continuing on to about 450 miles to the north, and then she ends up having to go even farther than that because the snowpack is just so bad. So she goes up, I think, to, I can't remember the name of it. Anyway, it's closer to Mount Shasta. And so she's very disappointed and decides instead to continue her journey through the state of Oregon, which is about 450 miles, so it's about what she's missed anyway. And at this point, I'll wait a minute. I had to make two PowerPoint presentations because I couldn't do vertical and horizontal slides. That was beyond my technical capacity. So I have the horizontal ones coming up next. Just wait. So along the way, she encounters many situations that would frighten most reasonable people. She has, as I mentioned, trails that disappear under snow, unstable rock falls, poorly marked trails, bears, rattlesnakes, strange people on the trail. You always meet a few of those wherever you are. Unrelenting heat, water shortages, and boots that fly irretrievably off the edge of the trail. And you think, she must have been terrified. She writes about that a lot. She keeps fear at bay. She explains, "It was a deal I made with myself months before and the only thing that allowed me to hike alone. I knew that if I allowed fear to overtake me, my journey was doomed. Fear, to a great extent, is born of a story we tell ourselves. And so I chose to tell myself a different story from the one that women are told. I decided I was safe. It was a form of mind control, but for the most part it worked. Every time I heard a sound of unknown origin or felt something horrible cohering in my imagination, I pushed it away. I simply did not let myself become afraid. Fear begets fear. Power begets power. I willed myself to beget power. And it wasn't long before I actually wasn't afraid. I was working too hard to be afraid. The death of my mother was the thing that made me believe the most deeply in my safety. Nothing bad could happen to me, I thought. The worst thing already had." She's also determined to travel most of the way alone, although she does rejoice very heartily in the occasional encounters with other Pacific Crest Trail hikers along the way. Much of the book is about grieving her mother's death. She notes, "One of the very worst things about losing my mother at the age I did was how very much there was to regret. I didn't get to grow up and pull away from her and bitch about her with my friends and confront her about the things I wish she'd done differently and then get older and understand that she had done her best, the best she could, and realize that what she had done was pretty damn good, and to take her fully back into my arms again. Her death had obliterated that. It had obliterated me. It had cut me short at the very height of my youthful arrogance." Those of us who were adolescents probably can remember some of that. "It had forced me to instantly grow up and forgive her every motherly fault. At the same time, it kept me forever a child. My life both ended and begun in that premature place where we'd left off. She was my mother, but I was motherless. I was trapped by her, but utterly alone. She would always be the empty bowl that no one could fill. I'd have to fill it myself again and again and again." Her writing is powerful, painful, raw, and realistic. I was right back on the trail with her, wondering why the heck I had thought this was a good idea. All right, let me tell you a little bit what some of the reviewers have found. This book has been critically acclaimed by many reviewers and is a bestseller and doing fabulously well. Writing for the New York Times, Dwight Garner commented, and I just had to put the whole quote in because it's so wonderful. "It's not very manly, the topic of weeping while reading. Yet, for a book critic, tears are an occasional occupational hazard. Luckily, perhaps, books don't make me cry very often. I'm a thrice-a-year man at best. Turning pages, I'm practically Steve McQueen. Cheryl Strait's new memoir, Wild, From Lost to Found on the Pacific Crest Trail, however, pretty much obliterated me. I was reduced during her book's final third to puddle-eyed cretinism. I like to read in coffee shops, and I began receiving concerned glances from matronly women, the kind of looks that said, "Oh, honey." It was a humiliation. To mention all this does Ms. Strayed a bit of disservice, because there's nothing cloying about Wild. It's uplifting, but not in the way of many memoirs, where the uplift makes you feel like you're committing mental suicide. I wasn't exactly sure what he meant in that. This book is as loose and sexy and dark as an earthy Lucinda Williams song. It's got punk spirit and makes an earthy and American sound. Growing up poor had come in handy, the author says near the close of her book. I probably wouldn't have been fearless enough to go on such a trip with so little money if I hadn't grown up without it. The lack of ease in her life made her fierce and funny. She hammers home her hard-won sentences like a box of nails. The cumulative welling up I experienced during Wild was partly a response to that too infrequent sight, that of a writer finding her voice and sustaining it right before your eyes. Oprah Winfrey chose Wild for a book club, describing it as a book about being brave when you never thought you could be. And Melena Watrous writes in her review for the San Francisco Chronicle, "This is both an adventure story and an extended mediation on loss. As Strayed lumbers up the West Coast, she spends as much time describing her inner landscape as the scenery. This makes sense, given that she had only her thoughts for company. She's not afraid of messy contradictions, either. She fears one man who seems like a sexual predator, but lusts freely after others with whom she gets into cars. She takes opium from a stranger before deciding it might not have been a smarter smarter not to. She holds off on sex for most of the books, but then lets herself go and feels no remorse. She's brave in her candor, not trying to make herself nobler than she is or to tidy things up." And then Lauren Egbert Crow wrote in the LA Times Review of Books, "It's no surprise that this memoir has been so well received. Strayed uses her talent for craft, her refreshingly candid narration, to connect with her readers, even those whose life experiences match hers not in the least. Strayed's memoir gets at the heart of the human condition, inspiring readers to reach outward and inward in equal measure." And so, to be fair, I thought, well, I should find some negative reviews. And I tried. And I didn't really find any major newspapers or anything that had a really negative review. So, as always, Amazon is a helpful place to go. So here are some comments from people who rated this book as a 1. "Disappointing and at times utterly ridiculous. I had no idea the adventure I would get would include a sexcapade in the forest." "This book left me wondering why I ever read it. I kept hoping page after page that something uplifting or intriguing would happen. I must have been a mystery reader. Nope, nothing. My mind felt as abused as the blisters on her feet, which she describes in detail on about every page." Here's another. "I downloaded this book to read about the section of the trail that goes to the Sierras by Mammoth, Red's Meadows, Tuolumne Meadows, Roosevelt Wilderness, Levitt Meadows, Raymond Lake, and Desolation Wilderness. Guess what? They just drove around it." "The title of the book should have been, I hiked part of the PCT." Okay, I wanted to like the book. I really did. "But it's pretty much one giant whine. Poor me, my feet hurt, my hips are chapped. Where did I put the condoms? I lost my mother, so I cheated on my husband. The title of the book should have been, I hiked part of the PCT with a condom in my pack, but missed the most beautiful parts of the Sierra Nevada." That reader didn't like it either. Okay, I only have 2 more. We're almost done. "Far too much of the book was dedicated to trying to elicit sympathy for hers and her mother's life experiences. It became tedious and simply didn't work for her. Ms. Strayed came across as too self-indulgent to fulfill the role of heroine. I'm not sure that's what she was looking for, actually. She was not particularly likable. Read Bill Bryson's account of his Appalachian Trail experiences if you want a five-star adventure. The interesting thing is that I have read Bill Bryson's book, and it's been a long time since I read it, but I was really struck by how poorly prepared he was and how dangerous his diet was, and how he really had no clue what he was doing. So maybe that's why he had more adventures, because she really did prepare. Despite my final review, if you are looking for a book about hiking in the wilderness, this one isn't for you. She was terribly unprepared for this trip. If her pack was so freaking heavy, why didn't she lighten her load? Well, if you'd read the chapter 2, she did. Okay. Now I wanted to talk a little bit about some of the parallels that I saw and why this book spoke to me, make some comparisons between her journey and mine. But at this point, we have to shift from Monster, by the way, was the name of her pack, which she gave to it after she discovered what a monster it was. Okay. So, parallels between Strayed's journey and mine. First of all, we both hiked portions of the trail alone. Almost all of the time, she hikes alone. Although you can't hike the Pacific Crest Trail without running into other hikers. In my case, I had people hop on and off with me. When I decided to do it, people said, "Are you going to do it alone?" And I said, "Well, yeah, I guess so. Don't you want other people to come along?" I said, "Well, it's my friends. I have a lot of backpacking friends." So I had people kind of hop on and hop off about every other leg with me. So I had actually spent lots and lots of time in the wilderness, but I'd never hiked on my own, so I wasn't sure if I liked it. But I discovered, like Cheryl Strayed, I loved the solitude. I loved hiking by myself. And really, I think I agree with her, it was so empowering to just be out in the wilderness on my own, doing my thing. I really found it to be a huge gift. Like her, I also had constant food fantasies. I mostly craved fresh fruit and salads, chocolate. I always crave chocolate, and ice cream. But at one point, one of my hiking buddies was hopping off the trail, and some friends of hers brought some food for me. And they gave me a delicious chocolate chip cookie, but even better, a hard-boiled egg. Now, I normally don't get all that excited about hard-boiled eggs. I mean, I like them fine, but I'm telling you, it was pure protein, and it was so exciting. Okay, we both, I think this was my interpretation, had sort of messages from animals. Okay, here you see two animals there. In her book, she describes seeing this fox, and it's just kind of walking in front of her, and then it kind of turns around and looks at her, and then it runs off, and she says, you know, "Hey, come back. And then just spontaneously, she starts screaming, "Mom, Mom, Mom." And you don't know if it's because she thinks it's Mom, the fox came from Mom, but I have a similar story. One morning, I had just finished two legs of the trip. One was Stephanie hiking into Crater Lake, and then my sister and her husband met me in Crater Lake, and I was hiking with them for a few days. And I left to go up back up to the trail in kind of a mid-afternoon. And it was the only time that I was really I really missed my dad. I was really bleak. Every night when I hike the trail, I made an altar. And as I hike during the day, I would pick up things that were interesting or pretty. I had lots of feathers, interesting moss, pieces of wood. My dad was a woodworker. And I would just sort of tuck them in my camera bag, and I would end up all this stuff. And then at night, maybe I'd find some pretty berries or flowers, and I'd make a little altar, a little tiny candle. When I'd ask my mom, I was kind of nervous because she hadn't done anything with the ashes, and we were kind of waiting to follow her lead. And so I asked if I could just have a small amount to take, and she loved the idea. She gave them to me in a little film canister with the bird sticker on it, because my dad had been a big birder. I thought that bird sticker was the sweetest touch. So I just sprinkle a few ashes. If I was by myself, I would talk to my dad. If somebody else coming down the trail came into my camp, I didn't care. If I was with friends and they had lost a parent or someone dear to them, I asked them to tell a story. I would tell a story about my dad, and I asked them to tell a story about their parent who had died. And it was really, people loved it. The people who hiked with me would sometimes stay up so late talking and telling stories that I would have to say, really, you know, I'm kind of tired. I really need to get to bed. We have a long day tomorrow. I'm back to my hiking up toward Mount Thielson. And part of the reason it was hard for me was my mom said, be sure to put some ashes by Mount Thielson. Your dad loved Mount Thielson. I regret that I never asked her why. But it was just a mountain that he particularly loved. So I get to this beautiful meadow, and I set up my tent, and I don't even know if I ate dinner. I just resupplied. I'd eaten a lot of food at the where I was hiking from with the Diamond Lake Resort Lodge. So I went to bed, and in the morning, I'm lying in bed thinking I'm going to get up really early, and instead I'm just bleak. I just feel sad. And as I'm lying there, I hear. And I'm thinking, oh, the birds are in my garbage sack again. I just left my bits of garbage that I carried out in a plastic bag. And so I unzip the tent fly, and I throw it open. I say, get out of there. And I see this little gray butt. And I'm thinking, this is very odd. I'm in the wilderness, and why is a lamb out here? And then this little mini schnauzer face turns around and looks at me and then limps off away from my tent. Of course, I'm frantically trying to jump out of my sleeping bag, and I went looking, saw her disappearing into the woods. And I really quickly got some food out and did the Hansel Gretel trail. And she came creeping back into my camp following the trail of crumbs. She didn't look good at all. Was limping, very, very thin. I thought, there's something wrong here. This dog doesn't belong here. That dog ate everything I gave her. It was a good thing I had just resupplied. I'm feeding her crackers and string cheese, and pretty soon she's eating my oatmeal out of my bowl. I was like, hold on here. Fortunately, I had taken a cell phone with me, and I was able to get a signal. And the dog had tags, and I was really nervous about not having enough of a power in my cell phone. So I called my sister and said, call this number and see if you can figure out what's going on with this dog. As it turned out, she was able to get a hold of the owner, who was overjoyed because the dog, this was in, I think, about the 6th of August, and the dog had disappeared the 4th of July. The dog had been out there for a month, and she was in pretty bad shape. So the owner hired someone from the horseback riding place at Diamond Lake to come halfway up, 3 miles up, and I hiked 3 miles down with the dog wrapped in it. She was just shivering the whole time, wrapped in my shirt, carried her down. The only time she barked was when that horse came up, and I thought, oh no, please, you got to get on that horse. But the rider just tucked her in his shirt, and off they went. So I was never lonely again, and I was never as sad. I still miss my dad, but I felt like my dad knew that I needed a job to get over myself, and he sent me that dog. So I needed to do a little rescue. I needed something to feel really good about, and so I've always been grateful to that dog. The woman sent me a $50 check after she got the dog back, and I donated it to the Humane Society in her name. Okay, I better get moving here. We also, I shared with Strayed auditory hallucinations. She talks about, you know, like running these tapes in her head, hearing all this music. I used to, at night, hear, oddly enough, car radio music. And it happened early on in the trip, and we were, it was coming out of kind of near Mount Ashland, and I thought, the next morning I commented to my fellow hiker, did you hear car radio music last night? No, I don't think there's any car radio music. But I decided it was just kind of filling in the cracks. I definitely had boots that were too small. Just like, and I was well prepared and an experienced backpacker. Although a friend of mine who had done the California told me, get boots that are two sizes bigger than you normally will. And I said, you can't do that. Those'd be clown shoes. You would be tripping over your feet. Whoops. Oh, I've done this out of order. I forgot slide five. We both got kicked off due to trail hazards. Cheryl, because of snow, and me, because of the B&B fire. That is the B&B fire on day one. I was up on a pass, and these hikers said, look out over there. There's a fire over there. Well, actually, there were two fires, and you can clearly see that in the two different locations of smoke. So by the next morning, even though I was 20 miles from Highway 20, which was, and started on the other side of Highway 20, I was in a very smoky bowl. It was a little unnerving. And then the other thing is that we had feet that hurt the entire time. I had blisters, new blisters, for 35 days or 34 days or whatever it was. And we both got new shoes along the way. I also had an aching back and neck and shoulders, as did she. And I had a couple of experiences of not finding water where I expected it and needed it. And I agree with what Cheryl Strayed said. The PCT got easier for me, but that's different from getting easy. Getting easy. Got easier, but not easy. Differences? I had a credit card, and I wasn't afraid to use it. I only hiked one state at a time. I didn't do, between two different journeys, I did about 1,000 miles, but it was not all at the same time. And I had lots of backpacking experience. I was really at home in the woods. So that part was much easier for me. And I had in-person resupplies. People brought me special treats. I didn't have to worry about my last pennies going to buy an ice cream cone. I just made my friends buy it. And I had layovers with really comfortable beds. So what do I think WILD's about? I think it's about the redemptive power of the wilderness. It's about coming to terms with who your parents were and weren't. And it's about grief and loss and moving on. Strayed's book is open, honest, candid, and blunt. She shares her truth, not sparing any of the details of her longings, sexual needs, anger, or pain. For much of the book, I felt like I was back on the PCT, taking stock every day of which body parts hurt the most. Like any reasonable long-distance hiker, I shared her doubts about the wisdom of taking such a journey. And like her, I reveled in the joy of having done so. All right, thank you. Questions? I went too long.
Can we remove the feet?
Oh, sure. You know, I was going going to do a little disclaimer. If you're squeamish, don't look at this one. There were times when I wished I could have. So I'll just sort of scroll through these while people have questions if you want. You can kind of look and question.
Did you keep a journal?
I did not.
Did you keep a journal?
Did I keep a journal? I did not. In part, I took something to write in a journal, but usually I was too tired. It's hard to even imagine the amount of physical exertion it takes to do it. In Washington, I know, I think I wrote one entry. And Washington, as it turned out, is much steeper, much wetter, much more up and down and up and down and up and down and arduous than Oregon. Really just kind of go up and go along a crest. There's some up and down, but whew, Washington was tough. Yes.
How many miles would you average, and how much did you carry in pounds?
In Oregon, I probably started out with close to 50 pounds because then the first leg there wasn't a lot of water, and so I was carrying quite a bit of water. By the time I got to Washington, I realized, well, I wasn't sure there was going to be more water always, but I realized that I really could ration it on the days where I needed to. Although that isn't always such a good strategy. You think you're doing okay, and then all of a sudden you feel like you just want to sit down and cry. And in terms of days, I think I probably averaged about 12 miles a day. But I had this is how I learned to use Excel, really, is doing my PCT plan. And so I would break it out into about 12 miles a day. But what I ended up doing, because my feet hurt so much, is that I would hike more so I could have a day off. And I knew somebody was coming to pick me up. There was somebody back in the back there who had their hand up.
Same question.
Oh, okay.
We had
18. I think probably the most I did was a 23-mile day. Yes.
I can talk loud. Oh, can I hear you? I have a question about. I remember Bryson's book. I remember he tells these horror stories of unsafe things that happen on the Appalachian Trail. So, were you ever afraid? And what kind of backup plan did you have for safety issues, like people, other? Terrible people.
Yeah. You know, it was interesting. I was having some thyroid problems before I went, and the endocrinologist I was seeing said to me, "Are you going to carry a gun?" And I said, "What? No, I'm not. You know, what would I do with a gun? I don't have any idea how to handle a gun." And a lot of people ask me, "Were you afraid?" And my question is always, what would you think I would be afraid of? I have been out in the woods since I was, you know, a really little kid. I've led a lot of service trips for the Sierra Club. I've never been on foot and seen a bear, except once in Alaska, probably a mile away, we could see it with binoculars. So, you know, elk, yeah, deer, yes, I saw, you know. And as far as meeting creepy people, I think that there are creepy people that you can meet. But I think you have to be really, really motivated to go out and, you know, 100 miles in the wilderness to molest some woman. And furthermore, I wasn't exactly some young babe. I was doing this. I started this craziness when I was 50. So... I didn't have a lot of fear, but I realized with the B&B fire that I didn't have. I ripped up my book, and I carried only the section that I was hiking. And those book guides don't really have a lot of land on either side. So you don't really, you know, if you got this way, you get to this trailhead, but where is that trailhead? I didn't always know. But I did the same thing in Washington. I wasn't going to carry a great big Mac because it was too heavy. So, but there are also people out there. It's a good question.
On the Appalachian Trail, people take trail names. Did you take a trail name?
I did in Washington because a friend gave me one. At that time, I was doing some research at the Oregon Women's Prison. And so my buddy dubbed me Prison Mama because she figured it would give me some street cred.
Did one of the angels help you when you had to go around the community?
I was meeting Stephanie, but somebody came into my camp and was looking for another hiker, and they said that I had to get off the trail at a lake, and I had to get off as soon as I got to the McKenzie Pass, that observatory, D. Wright Observatory, because the trail was closed. And I was like, oh, I don't think my friend's coming till tomorrow. And so they called her, and they also said, if she doesn't come, you can come and camp in our yard. But I also had another experience. Oh, I was going to tell about another trail angel. Oh, this was in the Oregon leg. At the very beginning, I was going to Lake of the Woods, and it was really toward that. Part of the reason I had blisters the entire time is it was record-breaking heat on the day that I started. And I had these shoes that were, you know, a half size bigger than I normally wear, where I should have done two sizes. So I kind of started off with blisters, and then I just couldn't. I couldn't stop producing them, even though I got bigger shoes. So I was hiking in. There are a lot of detours you could take, and one of them is to go into the Sky Lakes Wilderness, which is more beautiful than the actual. I think you go through the Sky Lakes Wilderness, but I went in the section where you actually see the lakes. So I was detouring up to Lake of the Woods. And to do that, you had to do 9 miles on an asphalt road. And on feet that were killing me anyway, it was really hard. And I'm sort of limping along this road, and these bikers go out, and they go for a 30-mile bike ride, and they pass me coming back, and they stop, and they said, you know, walking awful slow. And I said, yeah, I've got really bad blisters. And so they said, well, we have a cabin. Would you like to come and stay at our cabin? It was a man and a woman. And I thought, I don't know these people. Could be unsafe. She said, well, we're having, you know, chicken and fresh blueberry pie for dinner. I said, yeah. So actually, let me zoom ahead. That's the picture I took out of my bedroom window. They let me do laundry. So they were trail angels. They weren't official trail angels. I mean, trail angels are people who come sort of up always and are kind of looking for people to help. But then there are also occasional trail angels who are in the right place at the right time, as far as I was concerned. So, yes?
Have you ever heard of a book called The Complete Walker?
Yeah. I don't think I've heard of that one.
Well, that was my Bible when I started to hike.
Uh-huh.
And it teaches you to do things like cut the tags off your tea bag.
Yeah. When I did Washington, I was a lot lighter. But I have discovered the super light packs offer no shoulder and neck and back support. So I'm kind of in the middle now. I had my old, really old external frame pack the first time and a Go Light pack the second time, and it just wasn't enough. And also, I think I always carried extra food because I was hiking solo. I always had like an extra day's meals. I probably would. I'm sort of a practical, prepare for emergencies. But I was always getting ahead because it meant that I could have extra time off. Any other questions? Yes.
Can you hike with
Yes, you can. Can you hike the PCT with a pack animal? Yes, you can. And actually, I have in Washington, I ran into pack llamas. And you can also hike with a dog, except there are certain sections that go through state parks and Crater Lake. My sister and her husband were coming to hike with me in Crater Lake, and they brought their new dog. And so we were going to hike together as a threesome, and instead we did one person take the dog and go someplace else where you could have a dog, and then my sister hike with me in the Crater Lake section. Would you like me to just, these are just mostly pictures from along the way, and if you need to go, I know it's time. This is my an early altar, and I would just pick up things as I went along, and mosses and stones and pine cones, and make a little altar, sprinkle a few ashes, talk to my dad. This one I was alone, I'm pretty sure. That's coming into Crater Lake. Hiking along the rim, beautiful wildflowers everywhere. That was an altar, I think, where the squirrels were going after the pine cones. This beautiful, beautiful scenery everywhere. I have to say that my feet on both times hurt every day. It's physically hard, hard. There was never a time when I thought, I feel terrific and nothing hurts. Something always hurt. And there were many, many times where I thought, why in the world did I think this would be fun? But I loved it. And I would love to go back and do California. And I think about section hiking, starting north and going south. I also think about just doing the whole thing. But I don't know if I could do it. Close to 60, 1 week. This is Mount Thielson. That's the meadow where I found the dog. And that's the meadow where I made my favorite altar, which I think was this one. It had this beautiful little feather, and it was just... this is a burn above Waldo Lake, which is kind of a... before you get to what is now the B&B fire. And when we hiked... When Stephanie and I hiked the missing 50 miles... We had to go through sections of the B&B burn. This is my dear friend Martha, who hiked both in Washington and in Oregon with me. And in Oregon, she had a bit of... It was infectious. She got my blisters. More altars. This one had a collapsed wasp's nest because there were so many of them. They were just kind of falling down on the ground. So I put one in my altar. This is Obsidian Falls, just a little bit south of the... well, it's in the Three Sisters Wilderness area. And this is also a favorite altar because I found all this obsidian and just made a little altar. This I put in because of my Sierra Club work, clearing trails. This was in Three Sisters Wilderness area. All of these down trees were cut by hand, with handsaws. You're not allowed to use power tools. You're not allowed to use chainsaws in wilderness areas. And so I it was really fun doing this hike because I would admire the trail work. I would come across a little section where they built a causeway over a boggy area. Man, they really did a nice job here. And so I took this one because I just really appreciated, I knew how much hard work had gone into making that trail clear. This I say is approaching South Sister, but I was reflecting on it this morning. I'm not sure if it was South Sister or maybe Middle Sister, but just... And actually, my mom died about 2 years ago, and my siblings and I and all of our kids went up just off of the section of trail that goes across the lava beds, going out of D. Wright Observatory, and we went down the trail. My nephew and my sister-in-law both were having problems with their ankles, and so we couldn't go very far, but we went about a quarter mile up the trail, went up over a little knoll, completely away from anyone who was hiking, and right there you were looking right at the North and the Middle Sister, and it was the most, it was like this, it was so beautiful. And we had my mother's and my father's ashes. And we just all stood in a line and threw them up. And my husband caught a picture of all the ashes in the wind. It was really cool. But I didn't want to bring that because some people might think that's a little creepy. This is the section before I got to the... when the B&B fire was starting, I think this first picture, the one with the blue sky, I think was probably taken the first day where you're starting to get into lava. And the second day you can see the sky is really starting to get smoky. And same thing here. This is an altar. I knew I had to get out, so I climbed up onto the top of this lava bed, and this did a little altar up there. Because I was right at the beginning, for one weekend, the Forest Service shuttled people around from Sisters to Allali Lake. And it took several hours because it involved all these different agencies, so we kept having to get into different vehicles. It's kind of crazy. Most of the people were through hikers, I just lucked out. But I had to wait for my next resupply at Allali Lake for a few days. And this is probably about halfway through because by the end, I'm not sure you could see Mount Jefferson because of the smoke. And then here I am headed toward Mount Hood, where the flowers really got incredible. And oh, back there is, whoops, never mind. Oh, I'm doing the wrong one. We go back. Huckleberries. That's what I wanted to point out. When you hike the PCT, in Washington, I had to make the huckleberry rule. And that was, I was only allowed to eat the huckleberries that I picked on the fly. I could not stop and pick because I would never get to Canada. That was an amazing huckleberry year. And this was going around Mount Hood. This is Ramona Falls, and there's a little altar there at the tree. Beautiful, beautiful wildflowers. These are my last day. People met me at Mottam Lake. My mom showed up, and she has this person in the car. I didn't even recognize her because it was a friend of mine from Texas, from Houston. And she came up and hiked the last day with me, which was very cool. And another friend brought along this foot stuff and gave me a foot massage on those horrible-looking feet on the last day, about halfway down the trail. And that was the end. And there were tears in my eyes because I just had such mixed feelings. I loved it so much, and I was so happy to be off the bike. Oh, my God, I don't have to hike anymore. And this is the T-shirt that my cousin concocted. My mom hiked it in 75. I hiked it in 78, or my sister in 78. 2003, what took you so long, it says. I think that's it. And Stephanie brought this T-shirt. I didn't even know she had it. I probably gave it to her for Christmas one year. Sorry for going over.
Oh, that was just perfect.
I just want to tell you, for some of us,